Thank you, Lee. That was excellent. We now move a little closer to the Vic's working venue for all these years, the campus. And just a note here that this is a decennial Columbus year, 510 years. And so on the campuses, again, there's some ferment in the direction of the reconstruction or deconstruction, I guess it is, of Columbus, and a lot of different theories going around. Current one is that Columbus was gay, and apparently what he was trying to do was to find a shorter route to San Francisco. It's just a theory. I don't vouch for it. Our next speaker is someone who is now working on the campuses and trying to oppose things like the deconstruction of Columbus and a lot of other bad stuff. He spent a number of years in government. When Ed Meese and Don Devine and Joe Morris were down there in the Reagan years attempting to politicize the government, perish the thought. Ken Cribb was right there with them, and one of the things that Ronald Reagan, I think I'm quoting him correctly, said that he said, "Sometimes our right hand doesn't know what our far right hand is doing." And Ken's job was to keep them informed of what the far right hand was doing. Prior to that, he had been a staffer at ISI, and I met him when he was doing that. And then he became Vic's successor, and he is now the president of ISI and doing a marvelous job in carrying on in the great tradition of his predecessor. Would you please welcome at this time T. Kenneth Cribb.
It's always a challenge to be introduced by Stan Evans. This is not the first time I've been introduced by Stan, and I want to share with you on another occasion. It was in the early days of the Reagan administration, and that was one of those fractious meetings of conservative leaders who always wanted more than the Reagan administration was delivering. And of course, I was the guy from the Reagan administration in this hostile environment. Stan, I knew, was my friend, and he was the chairman of the meeting, and I knew that he would take care of me and insulate me from the slings and arrows. So I was trying to cajole this hostile audience into whatever we were up to at the time, and said, "Now look, I know that you have your objections and that we haven't done everything yet that we need to do, but I want you to know that a good conservative has now just been appointed Undersecretary of the Treasury, and there's another good conservative that just gone in as a Deputy Solicitor General over at Justice Department, and another good conservative is at the Environmental Protection Agency." And Stan at this point interrupts and says, "It is very gratifying to hear from our friend Ken Cribb that there is a Reagan underground developing in the Reagan administration." I was dead. True? All right. It has been my distinct honor and privilege to follow in Vic Milione's footsteps. It was really easy. As you can see, we share about the same shoe size. In fact, Vic is one of the only men I've looked up to whom I did not also have to look up at. But ISI will shortly celebrate its 50th anniversary, and while others must be credited with the conceptualization of ISI, Vic must be credited with its very existence. He shared with Frank Chodorov the insight that the left sought to affect the long-term transformation of American character by dominating the very institutions charged with educating the young, with forming that character. American students were being treated as cannon fodder in the early 50s when Vic and Frank were beginning their work. in an ideological war against the foundations of our culture, which rages in the academy to this day. For most of the past 50 years, Vic commanded resources inconsequential compared to the left-wing academic establishment. But he never despaired. He would frequently quote, as Lee noted, Tocqueville to the effect that every fresh generation is a new people. And the reason he kept saying that, he knew that whatever the ravages of the moment, a life worth the living can be restored by properly influencing the best of the rising generation. But how to transform this insight into a living, breathing institution that could reach significant numbers over long periods? Well, for one thing, Vic was convinced that the early conservative movement's concentration on economic education had to be broadened to all the humane studies. From such breadth, worldviews are formed which can either affirm or sweep away arguments of economic efficiency. For another, Vic saw that for every means of doing damage commanded by the academy, ISI must have a constructive alternative for the student discerning enough to know that something is missing. If ISI was denied schools, it could have summer schools. If the classroom was out of reach, there was the independent lecture and the seminar. If ISI couldn't assign texts, it could make available alternative libraries of books and journals through the mails. In short, Vic brought to ISI an insistence on intellectual breadth and variety so that any essential need of the rising young scholar could be met. In the plenitude of those intellectual resources that Vic made available, one thing he refused to provide was a creed or a doctrine or any other ideological party line. When I was a young man and walking the Scottish borders with the Russell Kirk and seeking the certainties of youth, I asked him if he could give me a succinct definition of conservatism. Well, in properly refusing to give me one, he offered the insight that conservatism is the disposition of openness toward truth. That is to say, an openness toward the world as God created it, rather than a blind allegiance to one of those hypothetical worlds in whose name so many have been slaughtered. It is in that same sense that Vic has not sought so much to propound answers as he has urged that the young honestly confront the perennial questions of the human condition. What is man's relation to the divine? How does one live with honor? What is worthy of duty? What do the lives of great men teach us of the noble and of the base? How does the sweep of human experience inform the tension between liberty and order? What does history teach us about the rise of civilizations and their decline? Vic Milione counsels us to seek answers to these enduring questions, not through introspection, but by immersing ourselves in the best that has been thought and written. And through his beloved ISI, he has helped the best of the new generations acquire the hard-won wisdom of their fathers and help them translate that wisdom into the lexicon of their own time in history. As Whittaker Chambers wrote in the last sentence of his last letter to Bill Buckley, each age finds its own language for an eternal meaning. When ISI's bricks and mortars are rubble, when all of us here have resolved ourselves into adieu, the legacy of Vic Milione will live on because one day in 1953, he picked up the gauntlet and became the champion of the unseen things that do not die, and introducing countless thousands of young people to the great unthreatened truths he has written upon eternity.